The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Now, as ever, we start with a look at the newspapers. Very happy to be joined by Christina Finn, who's the political editor at The Journal, and Valerie Cox, journalist and author. You're both very welcome.
Hello, morning.
On this lovely morning, isn't it
indeed,
nice?
Indeed, yeah.
Now, I picked this to start myself, to be honest, Christina. Trump is moving nuclear submarines. Do you make of that story?
I know. I was just saying, you seem to wake up in the morning and something new has happened overnight with Trump. And the latest is that Donald Trump has ordered two nuclear submarines to be moved to what he calls appropriate regions in response to threats from the former Russian president. So this has to do with, I suppose, Trump was saying that he wants a ceasefire in Ukraine, and he had kind of put deadlines down for Russia to take action. And he's saying that nothing seems to be moving. And it's sort of been a war of words, I suppose, between the former Russian president, where he's been saying he shouldn't be, you know, taunting him and he should be careful what he says. So it looks like a bit of positioning here to try and get some action. So I suppose there'll be a lot of talk about, you know, World War III and whatnot. But let's hope that it's just tactics to get some movement. But again, it's
every few hours Trump is in the news. Now, I hate talking about him overall, but this is a striking one to me. It's a bit like something from a movie from Hollywood, isn't it? That's nuclear submarines moving towards Russia. It's just, is it to distract us from other things, do you think?
I mean, it could be, all right, because obviously the big focus, I suppose, yesterday was, you know, Gaza, and we had Witkoff go in there to see about the food distribution. And there's, I think, a lot of pressure on the US to take some form of action, late as it very much is. So it very much could be, you know, nuclear submarines tend to grab the headlines, don't they? And, you know, but it's interesting because I suppose Trump has somewhat had what some might say a friendly relationship with Russia since he's gone in. There hasn't been that sort of back and forth that as much as perhaps we've seen in other administrations. So this is probably one of the main sticking points we've seen that have come between the US and Russia, where, you know, Trump seems to be laying down the law of what he wants to see happen in Ukraine. Russia say that they're working on their own sort of peace plan, whatever that is. But I suppose trading taunts between each other, probably it's just not, it doesn't bode well, I suppose, is what the feeling is this weekend.
Yeah. Valerie, are you back to the 70s and 80s? Remember, Valerie, you're as old as me, you see.
I am indeed.
Do you remember all the nuclear threat?
I do, yes.
It seems like we're entering that world again.
Yeah, and I mean, at that time, Ireland was very religious. And you remember there used to be prayers said for peace with Russia and all of that kind of thing. But it's very interesting because this guy, Mr. Medvedev, he's actually regarded in the Kremlin as an irresponsible loose cannon. So I suppose it depends on if they can keep a cap on him or not. But at the moment, it is only a war of words, really up to now anyway. I mean, Trump said that Russia had 10 days from today, and today would have been last Tuesday, to agree to a ceasefire in Ukraine or be hit along with its oil buyers with tariffs.
Yeah.
So he's making those threats. And then Russia is saying, you know, reminding Trump that Russia possessed Soviet-era nuclear strike capabilities of last resort. Now, the other interesting thing is, though, do you remember we had reports a few weeks ago of Russian vessels close to Ireland out in international waters? So, you know, where does he regard as appropriate regions? And I'm just wondering, could he have been sussing out the coast off Ireland to bring in his nuclear submarines? I mean, you just don't know with that guy, do you?
You don't know. Now, we have to talk about tariffs as well, don't we? Because we're very up to current, aren't we, in our discussions of the newspapers, all over the papers this morning. Again, the tariff business is back in the news. What do you make of all this tariff discussion? And it keeps changing, doesn't it?
It's getting very, very serious, Luke. And, you know, the papers all have lead stories on it. And the Examiner is saying this morning, you know, and this kind of sums it up. The leaders of more than 60 countries plunged into a fresh race to secure trade deals with the United States. I mean, they're being treated like puppets. And there's a lot of commentary as well about the way Ursula von der Leyen kind of rolled over and agreed to everything the other day in her meetings with Trump. And I would go along with that. Now, you know, people are issuing almost, you know, good news comments on it, saying, well, look, it could have been far worse. And of course it could have been far worse. And if you look at some of the tariffs, they're absolutely outrageous, particularly the tariffs he's put on some of the poorest countries in the world. I mean, what does he think he's going to do to their economies? Syria, 41%. Myanmar, 40%. That's an outrageous thing to do. I mean, places like South Africa, Switzerland, 39, 30%, Canada, 35%. It is all very serious. But I actually think one of the best articles on that this morning is in the Irish Times. It's Cliff Taylor. And he's saying Ireland will adjust to US tariffs, but big issues await. And he kind of sums it up. He said the major issue is whether Trump's policy direction will stick. Do you base your investments on an expectation this is now the new world, or that Trump's policies will in time be rolled back either by him or by his successor? Right. Yeah. And he says it all comes down to this big question of what is our place in this new world, or is it a new world? Yeah. I mean, do we just think, well, Trump will be gone in a couple of years,
so
why worry?
We should wait it out, should we? Or what do you think?
I think there's a lot of, I think the word is uncertainty that you're hearing even coming out of Leinster House and, you know, in Europe. I think Keenan Brennan in The Examiner was writing about nations beginning to fall into line following some of these tariffs, which I think that's sort of the taste I think that people have in their mouth about this all, is that if the words of, you know, Europe being in submission, capitulating to Trump, but there's then the spin on it is, sure, 15%, sure, you know, could have been worse, guys. We could be in the trenches here. But the big question, I think, is around pharma, particularly for Ireland. So that Section 232 inquiry is meant to be taking about 2 weeks. So at the moment, the 0% tariffs still stick for pharma, which is obviously a huge industry in Ireland. I think there's about 30,000 jobs linked to US American pharma firms. So, like, big question marks over what that means. But Simon Harris was out yesterday. He held a trade forum with all sort of stakeholders to give them an update about what this means. And there still feels like there's an unknown here. The message going out is, look, Ireland will still have growth, but over about 5 years, we could be losing about 75,000 jobs. Yeah. So that's hard for people, I suppose, to, you know, imagine in their mind what exactly that means or what that means for the economy. But I think this is the problem with all this discussion around Trump and the uncertainty. It really hits customer and consumer sentiment, which
confidence.
Is what is the concern here, is that people that are thinking of buying the car or, you know, buying those big ticket items, that they're holding back, that they're going, oh, well, I'm not sure what the next year or two is going to be like. So there's a real risk here of, I think, the government having to maybe be honest about the unknowns, but also be careful that they're not scaring the wits of everybody, that it pushes us even further.
It's a balancing act.
Exactly.
Do you think von der Leyen's doing a good job, as Valerie mentioned? I mean, on the one hand, people say she did a great job, and then others are digging into her. So it's a very difficult job she has, I think. She's doing her best, I would imagine.
It's a balancing act, I suppose, but do you go in hard against Trump and face the wrath of him, or do you try and get the best deal? I don't know. I think some of those images that came out of the whole meeting, they just didn't look great. And I think the overall mood, I think, is that Europe has just been trying to appease Trump as much as they can.
Or treat him like a child, in a way, isn't it? Give the child a sweet and hope the child begins to behave.
Exactly, but at what point do people, what's the breaking point? What's the line in the sand here? Yeah. How far can he go before someone has to, you know, and what does that mean for us? You know, there's things like that, like even that conversation about the occupied territories bill, that's sort of the conversation we're having, is I think the sentiment in Ireland, I think, in particularly, is, you know, we kind of like to stand on our principles. Maybe that's naive to be saying come what may, but I think I feel that the Irish public in a lot of ways like to feel that they have principles, they like to stick to them no matter what. So.
That's right. Now, Simon Harris has mentioned, Valerie, how is the government doing? In the Irish Times, how has the government performed over the first 6 months? What do you make of this one?
This is Harry McGee's article in the Irish Times, and he's actually given everybody end of term marks. And the top two are Peter Burke and Jim O'Callaghan, probably unsurprisingly because of the immigration and law and order stance that he's taken. But I mean, I'd have a word of caution about this, because really the mark that you're going to get as a minister depends on what portfolio, awful or otherwise, that you've been given. And to be honest, Harry McGee, you know, he writes very well and he has all these pithy summations of how people are doing and so on. I mean, James Brown, poor James Brown, Fianna Fáil's James Brown, the poor man got housing. Now, he describes his first 6 months as dismal, but he says housing, it's where ministerial careers go to die.
Yeah.
And he's probably right on that one.
Well, it used to be health. But
it used to be health.
It used to be health, yeah.
Uganda, wasn't it? Health was called Uganda.
Yeah, of course, it's housing. And James Lawless as well, he landed himself in terrible hot water, of course, over the college fees. So Harry's summation there is, well, he got clobbered. And he did get clobbered. But, you know, if these people, they only got 4 out of 10, these two, they were the lowest. And if they managed to get a decent portfolio in the morning, you know, Minister for Welfare of Cats and Dogs or something, you know, they're probably going to go right
really
up
well.
There.
Yeah.
Or if it's money we're spending on something. The top two were Peter Burke from Fine Gael. He's Enterprise, Tourism and Employment. Yeah. Now, the thing about him is he was only appointed a senior minister last year. Mm-hmm. So really, he hasn't had time to his bib
make
at
any
all.
Mistakes yet. Is the thing? Isn't
I mean, he's still in the honeymoon period,
right.
isn't he?
That's right, exactly.
And he's allowed to get away with it.
Yeah.
And Jim O'Callaghan, of course, a first time minister again.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he's playing into the immigration thing, and he's ordered flights to take people home if they're not given asylum. So really, you know, those two. Yeah. We're talking about the portfolios.
I feel sorry for James Lawless. Now I'm going to speak up for him because he'd have to university. You see.
Oh so, yes, yeah.
We think he's doing a good job actually, and they've got allocated money now, $4.5 billion, and I've met him. He's a very clued in guy.
Yeah,
and yet he's being hammered in this report for one slip. Would you agree? Or
well, you know,
or is it worse
make a
than that?
Slip, big slip. When
it's a huge slip, isn't it?
Yeah, because I was
university
over
fees
in,
don't go near that topic.
Yeah, though. I was over in Japan with the Taoiseach when all that was sort of happening on the trade deal, and lots of questions about student fees, and you could tell it was a big headache for the Taoiseach because people were coming out with all different types of things. You know, pay your fees now, don't pay your fees now. What's going to happen come budget? And and like it is. At the end of the day, I suppose we're in the middle of cost of living thing. A lot of parents are, you know, counting what money they have. So when you're talking cold, hard cash, slip ups like that don't go down very well on the government benches. But I think like giving out the report cards, it's kind of a traditional bit of fun. I'm not sure how seriously the politicians take them. I gave mine out for the Journal earlier this week.
Did you agree with Harry,
all right, on James Brown as well. But I kind of lumped Micheál Martin in alongside him in terms of housing, because it's not just, you know, James Brown that's leading this. This is a government-led approach. And my criticism, I suppose, when you look at James Brown getting the 4 out of 10 for Harry McGee there in the Irish Times and Micheál Martin getting 6 out of 10, is my disappointment was the Housing for All new plan, which was heralded for months before the election, that, you know, this is number one priority. They're going to get on top of it. And now we're heading into August, September. Yeah. We still don't have anything. All we've really heard is changes to rent pressure zones, smaller apartment sizes and log cabins in the back garden. Yeah. And they're the ideas that have come out so far. And I think people, you know, who are in the midst of dealing and trying to buy a house, get on with their families and all the rest, I think coming out with a report, giving clarity to people before the summer recess, in my view, would have been the best
approach. Would have been a good thing to
do. I do agree with Harry McGee on that one.
Very good. Yes, we'll see how they do in the next 6 months then. Yes. We'll reevaluate them. Now, Valerie, you must move on. Another topic is all about crime, seems to be in the papers this morning. 4,600 criminals roaming free because of overcrowding of our prisons. And then while they're on bail, there's people committing crimes.
I mean, Luke, it's a ridiculous situation. The prisons are overcrowded by up to 120%. So this means even in the more modern prisons where the rooms are bigger, they're sticking 4 prisoners in a room. And very often, you know, they're literally just sticking in an extra mattress for them. But I mean, the system has completely broken down. And if someone is caught, taken to court and they're sentenced, and it could be quite a decent sentence, like even, you know, a few months or something. So they're taken to prison, they're processed, they're put in a holding cell, they're left there for about an hour, and then they're released back out. Now, if they've done something really awful, so I suppose a serious assault or a murder or something, and they have to be held, so what they do is they let somebody else go. So all of these people go out, and the paper points out, the Examiner points out anyway, that, you know, of these criminals, of these hundreds and hundreds of criminals who are out there on the loose, a lot of them would be there for larceny, shoplifting and so on. So what are they going to do to fuel their lifestyle?
Yeah.
They just go back out. They start all over again.
Right. Start committing more crimes while they're out.
No, and I mean, there is space out there. Let's take over the old barracks that aren't being used. Let's take over all these places and keep them there. because the criminals themselves know that if they're taken into prison, there isn't going to be space to keep them. They're going to get back out again and they're going to just go on with their lifestyle. So why are we doing this? Why aren't we? I mean, Minister for Justice again now, maybe yeah. he could, although he might lose a few marks if he's charged this.
He might lose marks.
But it
one.
Really seriously is something that we have to look at.
Yeah. I mean, crime comes up every so often, doesn't it, in a way? And now it's back in this
yeah,
story.
Yeah, look, it comes down as well to population increase. You know, I think I had a stat there this week that about 60%, I think, of people in Irish prisons at the moment are repeat offenders, which is such an indictment, I think, of the justice system yeah. when you're trying to talk about rehabilitation, and I don't know, is that a dirty word now? Because it just feels like we're talking about people being put into jail. Where's the programs to ensure that people aren't on, you know, a revolving wheel to go back into prisons? Because we have here, obviously, that there's a huge overcrowding issue. I think we've been talking about this for years. Jim O'Callaghan, I think, is committed to doing Thornton Hall, which has been talked about, I think, for about 20 years. But there just doesn't feel that there's a handle on it at the moment. And the Irish Prison Service are saying that they're in a statement that that they don't have any control over the numbers of people who enter its complexes. So they're saying they're just dealing with the people that are coming through the door. But it's not really a system that is working. Clearly, if people are being sentenced and are returning out in one day, it kind of reminds
me. Ridiculous, isn't it?
You'd hear a lot about in the US, I think. It's kind of a common practice for years. Right. And I think it's less so in one here.
Yeah.
So it is, I think, a bit concerning to hear that
one to watch. We'll see how the Minister for Health, or the Justice Minister does in the next few months on this one. What we about it?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things which interests me, though, is the standard of living for criminals, you know, in prisons. It's not a very dignified system at the moment. But I did quite a few interviews with families of criminals and so on. And I remember being outside one prison and the family came up and they said, look, we're protesting on behalf of our whatever he was. And he'd done something very serious. And I said, what's wrong? And they said the windows in his cell are all smashed and he's freezing cold.
Right.
And I said, who smashed them? Well, he did. You know, I mean, people who get themselves into the prison system and they're convicted, I kind of think they deserve what they get.
Yeah, that's a strange one. Now, we must, something lighter, for God's sake, to cheer people up on a bank holiday weekend. There's a piece, Kilkenny is the second most sleepless city in the world.
Yeah, this is a bit
sleepless in Kilkenny.
Yeah, I'm interested in this one because I think a lot of people over the last few nights might be, with the humidity, might be having sleepless nights. So Kilkenny seemed to be losing a few hours sleep. And it's interesting because I would have thought it's the second city, is it? Or the I don't know.
Oh, be very careful.
Second city. Yeah, I'm going to have to be careful with this one.
But we're all wide awake down there anyway.
Whatever. Yeah, so I'm not sure. Is it the long commutes up from Dublin, is it? You know, but yeah, an interesting one, all right. And hopefully they get a few more winks of sleep over the next.
Is there something wrong, Valerie? We're all sleeping less, and sleep deprivation is a big issue for many people, isn't it?
Well,
but Kilkenny now tops the league for people not being able to sleep.
Come on, Luke, this is a silly season. It's ridiculous. And I mean, they went to the Poor and Fortunate Tourism Officer, Martina Comerford, and they asked her, you know, what's going on. She's trying to make out that Kilkenny has won the pilot initiatives for a nighttime economy support scheme. Look, there's 10 places in the world here. Atlanta's number one.
Yeah.
Kilkenny, Dundalk, Drogheda and Derry are all here. It's absolutely ridiculous. Now, if this appears in a British newspaper, it's probably going to be a number of British cities.
That's right.
I mean, go to Kilkenny, and once the shops close, it's snooze city, full stop. It's not. I mean, and New York isn't even on it, the city that never sleeps.
Yeah, we wish them well in Kilkenny. They can tune into News Talk and have a nap. How about that myself? Great. Thank you very much, Christina Finn from The Journal and Valerie Cox, journalist and author.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.